The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's April the 23rd, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grain Field Marketing. He's in Normal, Illinois. And later in a half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Well, in agricultural news, it looks like the FAS, the Foreign Agricultural Service, forgot to consult Congress when it decided to drop a mandate to increase the share of U.S. agricultural exports. And speaking of exports, a container of beef from Creekstone Farms has arrived in South Korea. It should be inspected this week. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories later in the half hour. And then I'll take you through the 2006 cost of corn production numbers. Dale Latz of the FBFM has tallied them up. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss today's global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens right here on AM580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Taking a look at the numbers in Chicago as they finished on this Monday afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit for the day, $4.94. They were off 8 cents. July down 9 and a quarter at 505 and a half. And September's 512 and a half were down 4 and a quarter today. May corn futures down 8 and a quarter at 352 and a quarter. July at 364 off 8 cents. And December corn futures at 368 and a half, down 6 and a quarter. May soybeans at 721 and a quarter, down 2 cents. July down 2 and a quarter at 738. And November beans at 765 and three quarters were off 1 3/4. Bean meal futures May contract down $1.10 at $195.30. May bean oil futures at $32.13, and they were off 22 for the day. Feeder cattle now from the Mercantile Exchange. April contract at 107.45, a 40-cent gain for the day. April live cattle were up $1.80 at 97.42 and a half, and June futures there at 93.15. were 87 and a half cents higher. From the outside markets this afternoon, crude oil trading the June contract at $65.93, up 182. July futures at $1.65 a barrel higher at $67.15. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 12,938 is down just about 24 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Monday afternoon to take a look what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and Mercantile Exchange is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, are we going to fade it tomorrow? Well, I guess we have to really wait and to see what happens with the crop progress report. But it sure looks like traders in Chicago think that those numbers are going to be fairly large this afternoon.
Boy, it's nothing like a major report, just on a conditions report. But, yeah, it's going to dictate where we're going to open up tonight to see if we're in line with expectations on planting progress. As a nation, I think the trade sort of locked in between 13 and 19% being complete versus 4% a year ago. I mean, last week, that is. A year ago, we were about 25% done. But, you know, as a nation, when we had the record yield 160 bushels the acre, we're only 20% done at this time, so we'll see how close to that benchmark we come. But as a whole, when you visit with producers across, you know, Illinois, Indiana, it varies a lot. There's some guys that are done, there's some individuals haven't started, but for the most part, your most aggressive areas where they've been fortunate enough to get in there late last week, they're probably about 50 to 60% complete with their corn plantings the first time at least.
That'll be good news for farmers in Illinois and Indiana. Iowa have a good start before this rainfall is expected tomorrow night?
Not really. From what we're finding out, I mean, it's spotty. It seems like they're trailing here a little bit more than we are, but you go up in southern Minnesota, Mankato, Minnesota, there's a guy's done there, so it's really hit and miss. As a whole, we'll have a more of a breakdown here this afternoon at 3 o'clock and be able to sort of pinpoint where we are in different parts of the country.
Just for those producers who are locked in their cabs this afternoon to make sure they understand where corn is primarily grown in the United States and what rank the states come in order. It's Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Minnesota, followed by Indiana. And those states are the ones, primary states, that people will be looking at this afternoon when the Crop Progress Report comes out at 3 o'clock Central Standard Time. And those are also primarily the five top soybean-producing states. I'm thinking Ohio might sneak in there somewhere on that one. I don't recall. It changes from time to time depending on the year. How are... I guess because we have them in the cabs and they're certainly listening this afternoon, what's your best set of advice for producers on where they should be on their marketings and what they might be able to do or not to do at this time?
Well, I'll give the standard response that everybody's a little bit different, and each one's got different objectives and goals and different situations to work with. At this point in time, as the market goes down, obviously we did not sell enough. If your producer market's going down, you never have enough sold. Vice versa here, 3 months ago, we had too much sold too soon there.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer your question specifically, I would see how we act in December corn futures at this 360 level. If we fail to hold there, then that could be a warning signal. We could probably drift another 20 cents lower. Same thing in the November bean futures. I'd use the benchmark at 750. I believe those are key benchmarks to work here over the next week or so. We're sort of the lower end of the range, so we're willing to give it a little room, see if we can't turn up. But the number one strategy you can use right now as a producer is to buy a put option. I know I say options or puts, you either like them or you don't, but you know that's your choice. But that'll put a floor under you, and if the thing trends on lower and we're going down this 250 level like we heard over the weekend of Commodity Week, well, you're pretty well covered and don't have to worry about it. But if we run into some hot, dry weather from here on out, like 6 to 10 and 8 to 14 days, says above normal temperatures and below normal precip, we go from the freezer to the oven, we go up to $6-7 here on weather fears, then you've got the option to open here that you can sell your cash grain higher. So we feel the number one strategy as a producer from the conservative point of view is the put option route right now, Todd.
You might want to recap that just a bit for us. You were in for Commodity Week. That's our weekend program. Airs at 11:30 Saturday mornings. Can be picked up off of willag.org anytime you want to. Our guest was Glenn Ring. Glenn, looking for a pretty bearish outlook for both corn, soybeans, actually for all commodities. 250 was the nice round number. I think 245 was the number used on corn. You want to recap that conversation real quick?
Yeah, basically his work indicated some tops here in the commodities in general. I don't think there was one commodity that didn't have a top, and according to his work, he sees some recovery bounces in through here, but what I gathered from the whole thing is that he's maybe a little bit concerned fundamentally, even though he's looking from the technical side, that the weakness of the dollars are not really stimulated the demand for our commodities, especially in the agriculture side. And that sort of equates to, if we go ahead and get the crop in the ground, there's no weather concerns, that the risk is to the downside. But basically, from the corn point of view, he was looking at the old seasonal here, that once we get into spring in here, if there's no weather concerns, we drift lower into early summer. And I believe his one study showed that this December corn makes contract lows. It's been doing it here for about the last 5 years, if I remember right, and that if it follows suit in through here, the risk is to the downside as we go into the growing season.
Indeed it does. Would you buy into much of that, given normal growing conditions and that farmers actually put a 90.5 million acre crop in the ground? Not with less than that, not with hot, dry weather.
Well, normal situations, yes. If you attended one of our seminars this last winter, we showed the seasonal tendency chart there on the PowerPoint presentation that, you sort of rat around during the winter here, but once you get about May 15th, which is about crop insurance day, the momentum stuff turns down and the risk is to the downside, being weather is favorable. You go back in history, that's been pretty well true, and it trends lower clear into early harvest, and once you get into early harvest, then the seasonal tendency is back higher. But the big uncertainty is with these commodity funds out here, what are they going to do? Then, two, like you mentioned, is the weather. We've got such a large demand base underneath the marketplace that if the weather would start to really spook the trade here, we could see some dynamic trade in the corn and bean market as we go into May, June, and July.
Did the livestock markets trade just about the way you thought that they would after the release of the cattle on feed report Friday afternoon?
Well, cattle on feed report was out, and it suggested maybe a little easier tone from the numbers we looked at, but the market was able to close higher. The thing is the discount, the futures to the cash market, we did see a little short curving in the cattle complex, some technical buying. There was some mildly bullish news that beef shipments have resumed to Korea here. Initial amounts are small, but that's kind of a plus sign through there. The key thing is to continue to watch these cutout values and see what type of margins they have to work with. Cash hogs are higher. We're looking at maybe a little tighter situation in the cash hog market than what the trade was looking for. But seasonally, we start to run into some lighter numbers here as we go into spring and summertime.
Kurt, we appreciate you being with us.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Monday afternoon.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologists from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own Ed Kieser, chief meteorologist here at the radio station, says tonight in the north and central sections of Illinois, partly to mostly cloudy skies. In central Indiana and the south, mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers there. Lows will range from 45 in the north to around 60 in the far south. Tomorrow in western and southern Illinois and in southwestern Indiana, cloudy, some showers and thunderstorms arriving. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy. Highs will range from around 60 near Lake Michigan to 77 in the far south. Tomorrow, wind speeds will be about 8 to 16 miles an hour. The minimum afternoon relative humidities generally ranging between 40 and 60%. The extended forecast, the important part, widespread rain will fall beginning tomorrow night, Tuesday night into Thursday. That'll shut down planting operations for several days, says Ed, and may linger into Friday morning with some incoming weather systems that might slow down. Then after that, generally dry and warm weather expected during the upcoming weekend and into early next week. More weather at the bottom of the hour. Dave Dickey is here now with today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on AM 580.
In agricultural news, a report from the USDA Office of the Inspector General says the Foreign Agricultural Service dropped a congressional mandate to increase the U.S. share of world ag exports without consulting Congress. The scathing report says the FAS has not presented a balanced assessment of U.S. exports in the global market. The IG report says the U.S. share of global agricultural exports dropped from 22% in 1984 to 9.7% in 2005. FSA officials are objecting. FSA Administrator Mike Yost says the IG relied on questionable data and minimized the value of compelling economic analysis. A container of beef from Creekstone Farms has arrived in South Korea. It's the first shipment of U.S. beef since three cargoes were rejected late last year. South Korea says inspection of the beef is expected to take 7 to 10 days. The 6.4 metric ton shipment will undergo X-ray inspection for tiny shards of bone. South Korea has a zero tolerance rule on bone fragments. Directors from 12 state departments of agriculture, cooperative extension service, and university agriculture experiment stations have formed the North Central Bioeconomy Consortium. The consortium will help oversee renewable energy research and policy. North Dakota Ag Commissioner Roger Johnson.
Hopefully, if we can pull, you know, a dozen states, use them all pulling in the same direction for a project or a series of projects to the upper Midwest, we've got a little better chance of getting something done, a little more horsepower behind us.
The states involved are Kansas, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. The federal government posted the Social Security numbers of as many as 150,000 recipients of agricultural grants since 1996 on the web. The Social Security numbers were taken down last week, and free credit monitoring is being offered to those affected at a taxpayer cost of an estimated $4 million. The breach was reported to USDA on April 13th. On that date, there were Social Security numbers for 47,000 producers of grants from the Farm Service Agency and USDA's Rural Development. The website is maintained by the Census Bureau. And North Dakota Democratic Representative Earl Pomeroy and Kentucky Republican Representative Ron Lewis have introduced legislation to allocate $2 billion for clean, renewable energy bonds over the next 2 years. The bonds program, created as part of the Energy Policy Act of 2005, give companies incentives to invest in renewable energy, providing what amounts to interest-free loans for co-ops and public power systems to finance renewable energy projects. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. I know you're busy in the field at the moment. Two things about that. This is a good time to learn how to use the website in the evenings. If you miss something during the day, you can always go back and pick it up at willag.org. Sign up for our podcast and our newsletters. The other thing is, you're busy. You'll probably get tired in the afternoon. Why don't you pull that tractor over right now and take a little breather? Heck, even if you fall asleep at the moment, you can go back and catch the ag programming this evening at willag.org. I'd rather have that happen than have an accident out there on the farm. You think about it. We know you're working hard and you're working long. Take a little nap. It'll keep you strong throughout the afternoon. Willag.org is the place to get anything you happen to miss when you fall asleep. WILLAG.org. Now up next, the numbers are in, and it costs more to produce a bushel of corn in Illinois last year. That's not surprising, than it did the year before. The following numbers are aggregated from about 1,500 corn and soybean-only farms participating in the Illinois FBFM, or Farm Business Farm Management Record Keeping Association. Extension Farm Management Specialist Dale Latz helped compile the data. He says last year, the average grain farm in the group was about 1,250 acres in size and planted 53% of those acres to corn.
If we look at the figures last year, as far as our direct or variable costs for corn, totaled $218 an acre. That was up about $9 an acre from the previous year. It's interesting, we'll go back and look at 5 years ago, because we are in a period of escalating costs, certain costs anyway, as many producers know. If we go back to 2002, the direct costs have increased 35% from 2002. And again, when we talk about direct, mainly fertilizer, chemicals, and seed, drying and storage, and so forth, the other non-land costs totaled $141 an acre, up about 12% from the year before. A lot of that increase was due to kind of our non-land interest charge, higher rates and higher investment now in inventories of grain and so forth with higher prices. And land charges increased about 4% or $129 an acre. So a total of $488 an acre, which was about 6 to 7% higher than the year before for corn, but about 22% higher than 5 years ago in 2002.
On that note, Dale Latt says compared to 2002, fertilizer is up 48%. Seed costs have risen 35%. Fuel costs have nearly doubled, up 94% from 5 years ago. The farms participating in this survey had an average corn yield last year of 174 bushels to the acre. It means when you include all the cost to produce a crop, it took $2.80 to raise each of those bushels. Dale Latt says the $488 per acre corn figure is the highest on record. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3751. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
It's a Monday afternoon. Time now to check in on the cash grain market. The folks at the Andersons join us each and every Monday. Greg Johnson on the line today. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I'll bet it's really quiet there in the office. You got time to take a nap?
We were doing our part to contribute to that farm safety. So, yes, we were trying to take our naps this afternoon.
You know, I just as soon have them take a little nap and fall asleep and come back and learn how to use the website tonight as to lose, well, whatever time they might, if they happen to run into something out there, or far worse, because they're a little tired. So we'll take that one way or the other.
I understand, but I also understand it's hard to get them to stop with rain in the forecast in a couple of days. So I have a feeling most of them are going to push it as hard as they can for the next couple of days.
Yeah, what are you expecting this afternoon, by the way?
I think Illinois would, we're probably 30% done around here, but I think statewide you won't see that kind of a number, maybe 15 to 20, probably 20% done statewide, and that's probably one of the more advanced states. I think as you go east into Indiana and Ohio, it'll drop off. Minnesota will be in the single digits. Iowa's the big question mark. I don't think they're as far along as Illinois, but there are some places, like Kurt said, where they've really made some progress. So I think Iowa and Illinois will be interesting to see what they come out with, and those two states probably will be the leaders as far as percentage done.
You know, I haven't heard much, but it surprised me that the planters were rolling as early last week in the Champaign County area and East Central Illinois as they frankly did, mostly because it doesn't usually dry out quite that quickly. Are they going around a lot of wet spots out there, or did it just dry out more quickly than I suspected it might?
Maybe a combination of both, and I think people were just getting a little worried that if that forecast, which some forecasters had rained almost every day this week, last Thursday and Friday, so I think some people thought, even though it's less than ideal, it may be better than what we were faced with this week. Now, as it turns out, with a couple extra days to plant, maybe that's not quite as critical, but I think people did look at the forecast and try to get in as much as they could ahead of time.
Yeah, what was you wet yesterday probably is dry today after the wind yesterday. Wow, that was pretty powerful out in the countryside, wasn't it?
I've had a couple people say that they actually could probably use a little bit of rain Wednesday or Thursday. That'll probably cure a few mistakes if people did put it in a little bit wet.
Well, you got to like it when Mother Nature helps out.
That's right.
That's an awfully good thing. What are your bids for the day?
Cash corn, 340. New crop corn, 343. Cash beans, 695. New crop, 741. Cash wheat, 449. New crop, 460.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
And that's Greg Johnson of the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Somebody from his office joins us each and every Monday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report. In just about 2 minutes, I'll talk with the folks at the Chicago office of Chesapeake Energy about the agricultural weather. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Parkland College trustees will hold a closed meeting Wednesday to discuss a four-week medical leave for the school's president. The community college announced Robert Exley's leave this morning, but aside from saying that Exley's currently at home, spokeswoman Jody Littleton wouldn't expand on the release, including the exact reason for the leave. Exley suffered a heart attack last November and underwent bypass surgery. He's been Parkland's president since last summer. University of Illinois police say they're still determining whether the arrest of an Urbana man over the weekend is related to a series of armed robberies from a few weeks ago. Lieutenant Roy Acree says 17-year-old Brandon Crabb was arrested on Friday after two people reported being robbed at knife point that evening. At least one other suspect is being sought. Acree says those walking on campus are urged to walk in well-lit areas and to use other good safety habits. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan says her office has made deals with DeVry University and the Career Education Corporation over student loan practices. She says her office is looking at lending practices at other schools, too. Madigan says DeVry and Career Education were paid by lenders for preferential treatment when students sought loans. The deals are part of an ongoing investigation led by the New York Attorney General's Office into student lending practices. A lawsuit is challenging the law that created Indiana's In God We Trust license plate. Unlike other specialty plates, the In God We Trust plates don't have a $15 administrative fee. The suit says that's preferential treatment for people who want the plates. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels has signed a bill that would require mobile home installers to equip them with weather warning radios. The bill was initiated by Catherine Martin, whose two-year-old son and two family members died in a 2005 tornado that struck an Evansville mobile home park. Daniels called Martin as he signed the bill so she would be the first to know. He also invited her to participate in a ceremonial signing of the bill at a future date. The law also encourages mobile home park operators to provide written reminders to their residents to replace the batteries in their weather radios and smoke detectors each year. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to WILL Urbana. We're joined on this Monday afternoon by Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Okay, so we need pinpointed accuracy today. Tell me cities and times tomorrow when the weather is going to change to rainfall.
Well, it looks like actually for much of tomorrow here across the state of Illinois, we're going to see generally dry conditions with the rain really beginning across the western areas, i.e. those cities along the Mississippi River, and that'll be commencing around 6 to 7 p.m. tomorrow evening, and then that rain activity will work eastward with time, and for areas such as Champaign, Urbana, as well as further east into Indiana, it's probably not going to be until around like 10 o'clock at night, tomorrow night, until the first rains arrive here. So really, we have another 24-plus hours of totally open weather here across the Midwest, across Illinois and nearby areas for corn planting before the rains come in.
I guess I can stick that one in my pipe and smoke it, huh? I was being a smart aleck, but you as the rest of the weather folks we have are right dead on.
We try to help everybody out as much as possible, Todd.
Well, I appreciate that a lot. Okay, so duration then and rainfall amounts. If you've got anything on that, it would be helpful.
Well, that's the easy one there, Todd. And from a duration standpoint, it looks like we're going to have rain activity for about 36 hours or so, basically from tomorrow evening up until around midday on Thursday. So around a 36-hour window. Overall, your totals will range. It will be kind of variable range. I guess on average will be around half of an inch or so. Some areas less than that. Your heaviest totals, you could get some pockets up over an inch in those areas that are hit by the thunderstorm activity, but we really don't see any kind of widespread heavy rainfall, i.e., large areas of 2, 3, even 4 inches.
Will most places in the Midwest get a little rain over the next 3 days?
Yeah, we think so. In fact, our coverage of rainfall specifically over the next 3 days is around 70-75% of the entire Midwest receiving amounts in general, quarter to 1.25. So, yeah, most areas will receive rain, but it looks like as we go beyond this system, little of anything here coming up. And, in fact, over the next 2 weeks, it looks like the main rain system of note is this imminent one midweek.
Okay, and then we better check in on the rest of the growing regions around the nation, around the globe. Maybe start with wheat and work your way back to the incoming corn and soybean crop in China.
Well, across the wheat areas, especially Australia, has become somewhat of a hot topic here, no pun intended. And but that should be what we've seen here over the past week. We've actually seen widespread rains across the West Australia wheat belt, which has been the driest area. We've seen more here over the past 24 hours, and we see additional rains coming up this week. So that's not just West Australia, that's East Australia too. So their wheat belt is improving here as we start up the new planting season across that area. And then finally, areas of Europe have been somewhat drier this month after a wet March. Those areas include France and Germany, but it looks like rains will be returning by midweek and continuing on thereafter. So from a wheat standpoint, we really are improving these dryness areas around the globe. And from upcoming corn and soybean planting, we need to watch the central areas of China there, which have been not received all that much rainfall here lately, which is not that unusual, but it doesn't look like much rain across that North China Plain area over the next 10 days. So they're going to need some rain come May to allow for a favorable start to their corn and soybean planting, but not a big issue, just something to keep an eye on.
All right. Thanks much, Mark.
My pleasure, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. You can hear his comments again, if you'd like, on our website at willag.org. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a good and a safe afternoon.